a new initiative to tackle Auckland's housing crisis. It's the brainchild of Leonie Freeman, who's held top positions in the property sector, both public and private. She's currently a director of the publicly listed company Goodman Property Trust. She's a former general manager of Housing New Zealand. She's been a strategic property advisor to the Crown on major anchor projects in Christchurch. And she's led a strategic review of the social housing program at the request of the Finance Minister, Bill English. Leonie Freeman has advised the Auckland Council on the Yard 37 development at Hobsonville. And she's had her own very successful property management company. 20 years ago, she was responsible for the introduction and development of the website, now known as realestate.co.nz. Housing in Auckland, she says, is the biggest issue facing the city. And she's proposing the establishment of a new non-profit organisation involving every part of the sector. Private developers, public sector agencies, iwi and charitable organisations, to set a unified vision and to coordinate all participants to achieve the goal. The goal, she says, should be to build 125,000 new homes in the next 8 years, half of them affordable, in inverted commas, as part of a bigger plan to reach 420,000 new homes by 2045. She's launched a website this morning to support the initiative. It's thehomepage.nz. There's a link on our webpage. Leonie Freeman says there are many organisations working to solve the crisis, but they're working in silos and at times even at cross purposes. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Catherine.
How do you fix it? Everybody knows the problem. Everybody, as you outline here, has a theory on what's causing it and what the constraints are. How do you break through it?
Absolutely. And I agree totally. Everybody can talk about the problem very clearly. The challenge is there's very few people proposing solutions. And the purpose of the work that I've done has got two objectives. The first was to launch a website which helps improve the understanding of the housing issues, because it's a very complex issue. And the second one was to launch a comprehensive solution as a stake in the ground to enable us to go forward. And so I've done quite a lot of research overseas looking at how these big social complex problems are dealt with. And really what it comes back to is that there is no one single person, one idea or one organisation that's going to fix our housing crisis. And what I'm suggesting is that there are four key steps. And the first one is about creating a unified vision. Because at the moment we know what the problem is, but we don't know where we're going. So we haven't got the finish line in mind. And so I liken it a bit to the rowing boat. You imagine the rowing eights at the Olympics. If they want to win, they know where the finish line is. They have the coxswain sitting at the front. And then you have the eight rowers all going in together to get to the finish line. What we've got at the moment is we don't know where the finish line is, and we don't have a coxswain. And we've got all the rowers. We've got the government. We've got the council. We've got the non-for-profits. We've got iwi and the finance community and everybody else. But we're not rowing together. So my vision was around creating a sort of an aspirational statement which says housing is at the heart of connecting and strengthening Auckland communities. And then I've created six activity areas. One of them's housing supply, the second's home ownership, the third's around housing quality, fourth is around social housing, five is homelessness, and the sixth one is strengthening communities. Because the challenge we've got, given all the research done for the unitary plan, is that the projected demand in 30 years is another 1 million people, and we need another 420,000 homes to house those people. So how do we do that, but at the same time strengthen all our communities?
Right. What's your proposal? And first explain why you believe you're the person to do this. We hear from person after person after person, as we said, pointing to the problems, often pointing at each other. Mm. Why are you the person to have a plan that I presume you want others to buy into? I mean, you've done some work for the finance minister, for example. What happened to that, by the way?
So I suppose the reason why I'm sitting here today is that we can all look to someone else to take responsibility on this. And one of the questions I've personally had to wrestle with myself is what was I personally prepared to do to try and help fix the problem? And I don't want to talk about problems anymore. I suppose I want to focus on solutions. And I wanted to expand the level of conversation and put a stake in the ground and say, look, that from all my expertise, from my public sector, private sector, and the ability to look across cross sectors, I wanted to put a solution forward to start some debate, because then people can feed and start on solutions rather than going around and around in circles on the problem.
Why do we go around and around in circles, by the way? Because you work for a large company. I think it's the largest developer in the world, Goodman Property, right?
Yes,
so what's different about the way you go about or they go about the business of developing, and what is happening in what has happened in Auckland? Why have we ended up in such a logjam with a fairly obvious problem that was building over time? What fundamentally gets in the way?
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge is that it's so complex and there's so many different parts of the equation to get development happening. And so a lot of what's been the focus to date has been on simple silver bullet solutions, and that the thought that one person or one organisation is going to solve all our problems, and it just doesn't work that way. I liken it a bit to the Rubik's Cube, you know, that game you used to play, and it's about getting all the colours in a line. But if you just turn one little thing, it can impact everything. And so there's a whole raft of different things. And if you think about the debate today, you know, to date, it's been often focused on one thing. It's demand, it's supply, it's the loan-to-value ratios, it's immigration. It's people are thinking it's one thing and it's not. And we have to bring everyone together to solve this issue, because it's bigger than anybody individually.
Haven't we done that with housing accords between central government and Auckland Council? And, you know, you've got social housing in the mix as well, and I want to talk more about what happened with that Auckland project that you were working on, because it's another example of the various forces at play in many ways. But haven't we had people getting around the table? And what will take it to advance it further?
Yeah, so I don't want anybody to think that there isn't a huge amount of action underway, and there's certainly a lot of will from all the parties to solve the issue. But when you look overseas at the ways they've done to solve these complex issues, it's not usually driven by one organisation. It's about stepping back and saying, how do we solve this thing? Because the construction rate that we need is 2.5 times what's been done over the last 25 years. So what we're currently doing isn't going to get us there. And at the moment, we don't even know where there looks like as a city. And so what this is designed to do is, and it's been done extensively overseas, and there's been examples of the Collective Impact Initiative in New Zealand, is to say, let's not look to who should be fixing it. Let's look at what is the right thing to solve this problem for Auckland long term. And then we figure that out. And then we say, okay, how do we then solve those problems by getting everyone together? And yes, the council's done some really fantastic work. The government's working hard on some of its social housing things. The development community are undergoing developments. But what we need to understand is what are the blockages for each of those parties along the way? How do we get rid of them? And how do we know if we're on track when we actually haven't even got a really clear vision that everybody's bought into?
You've put some very specific numbers here.
I have.
And straight away I'm sceptical, because something as straightforward as the constraints on the construction industry would put paid to some of these targets, would it not?
And I suppose this is what we've got to get out on the table. Now, what I've done with the vision that I've proposed with those targets is I'm just putting a stake in the ground and saying, here's an example of a vision, because I didn't want to just come out and say we need to develop a vision. I'm saying, here's something that we can start with, but we've got to get that vision together, because once you've got that target, then you start to figure out, okay, one of the key components to achieving those targets is we have to look at capacity and capability within the development community, within the construction community, within the social provider, you know, the community housing provider sector, because everybody needs to be able to scale up and make sure that we're all going in that direction.
Okay, so you've put some targets out there.
Yep.
Housing supply, 420,000 new homes by 2045, 125,000 of them by 2025. Home ownership levels to reach 65%, including Māori and Pacifica, by 2025.
Yep.
Seems, again, a very, very bold goal. 95% of existing houses to be categorised as warm, safe and dry. 3,000 more social housing places by 2018. Again, that seems very steep at the moment. And an end to homelessness in central Auckland by 2022. That's just some of them. Then you go the next steps, which is the how-to.
Yep.
What is the structure that you're proposing that goes beyond council and government and private sector already talking to each other? What is it that you're saying is the structure that's going to deliver this?
So when I've looked at these, when you look at communities overseas that have solved or worked towards improving these big complex problems, they've instigated this concept of collective impact. And all that they've done is implemented a not-for-profit organisation that pretty much sits in the centre to first of all get all the parties together and develop that unified goal about where we're trying to go. And then it's within this very disciplined framework and guidelines, it's about bringing all the dots together and making sure everybody's aligned to the single goal and measuring to make sure that we're on track.
It's not a new bureaucracy. It's not a new government agency. It's an independent not-for-profit.
Yes.
And so who's part of it?
So you want everybody part of it. So again, the success of these initiatives overseas have been driven by four factors. The first is a really clear mission. So what is our end goal? The second one is the governance structure. So you need a group of influential city leaders that represent across the different sectors. You need funding for at least the 3 years to get momentum, and then you need a small, professional, dedicated team that puts this whole thing into action. It's not a huge, big bureaucracy. I don't see it more than 10 people. But it's about joining the dots and making sure we know where we're up to, where we're going, and making sure we're on track. And then taking Aucklanders on the journey with us.
What are the overseas examples, by the way, that have succeeded?
Yes, so there's a raft of them. There's one in Canada called Brandon City where they did an initiative taking people from rental accommodation to home ownership. There was one in Chicago called Opportunity Chicago, which created 6,000 jobs in a recession. There was another one called 100,000 Homeless Campaign where across 89 communities in America, they housed over 100,000 homeless people in under 4 years. You know, so there's a range of these things. And then you've got the New Zealand example, which would the best one, I think, in New Zealand of a success story is the People's Project in Hamilton, where in 2014, Julie Nelson, the chief executive of Wise Group and a group of city leaders in Hamilton, said they were no longer going to manage homelessness in central Hamilton. They wanted to end it by the end of 2016. And so far, they've housed 254 people. They've supported another 311. And of the homeless that they have got into homes, 94% of them have retained their tenancies. And it's been all about focusing everybody together and saying, case by case, how do we solve this homelessness? And then how do you prevent it?
One of the problems at the moment is that that's a fantastic initiative indeed. But the question is, where are the houses? Now, you've got multiple problems you're trying to solve with one underlying problem.
Yes.
There aren't enough houses.
That's right.
Okay, so let's get to step three, which is what you would bring to bear to try and get not only the houses being built or the properties being built, but ones that include affordable homes, because this is where we get interesting proposals to begin to influence the market. I mean, you talk about wanting to have these small, neat suburbs with three-bedroom homes and carports, but we know developers are building whacking great big properties because they can charge more. So what are you beginning to do to the incentives for developers to get affordable homes in the mix?
So I think one of the key things is we've all got to get on the same page and say that as a community we need more affordable housing. And a lot of this is about increased density and the need to go up. So we've got to take the Auckland communities on that journey and understanding that it is about higher density for more affordability. So that's the first step. Then in areas, you will get the developers looking at more affordable housing, because the unitary plan now, once that gets passed, has got the opportunity for a much greater density than we've had before. And then what you do is it's a matter of looking at all the levers you can pull. So there's a range of different things, everything from the council looking at their development and infrastructure contributions so that smaller houses pay less than bigger houses, because at the moment everyone pays the same. The government, for instance, may come to the table and look at deferring the GST payment on new homes so that it's paid for when the house is unsold. We might develop policies which could be things like that these affordable houses are only sold to homeowners or community housing providers. You know, it's about thinking, what are we going to do when the market turns? Because I know that's on the development community's mind.
I know it is too. It was supposed to have turned by now. The thing is, Leonie, with the way the world is at the moment, demand to migrate to this country seems relentless, and we were supposed to be past this peak already. The latest figures have come out and everyone went, what?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the what's going to disappear anytime soon on the demand side. But come back, because some of what you're talking about here is interesting. You're talking about quite deliberate interventions in the market to incentivise affordable housing. And what do the developers themselves say to you about whether that would work?
So I've shared this thinking with quite a number of players in the development community, and they are fully aware that there's the missing link of how this all comes together. Because at the moment, you've got people acting a lot in isolation, and this is really about how do we get that boat going a heck of a lot faster, and how do we get all together and making it work. Now, one of the challenges with this sort of thing is, and I'm sometimes reminded of JFK when he said at the start of the 60s, we want to put a man on the moon. And when he first said that, they didn't even have the technology to figure out how they were going to get a man on the moon. But by getting everyone together, you figure this out. We need an avenue to figure it out, to test things, to work on what's potentially successful and what's not.
But there will likely need to be direct interventions in order to encourage the construction of affordable homes anywhere near. I mean, we're looking at Auckland City at the moment. This is one of the points you make and some of the examples you give. You've got teachers, and not only teachers, many others leaving the city because they do not believe that they can build or own a home there, right? You've got workers. I hate to think where some workers are beginning to commute from to do minimum wage work or work that's not very, very high income in the city. So what you're saying is if it requires direct interventions to have what, entire neighbourhoods or entire developments that are affordable, what's the proposal?
So what I'm suggesting is that the examples I've given in my solution paper is sort of painting a picture for people of what it might look like. But there's a raft of things that all need to be done in unison to understand the question about, firstly, where are we up to now and how much are we building and what's coming through the pipeline? And then how do we get to what we need to get to? And so if we can save time through consenting reductions or making that process quicker and cheaper, if we can, tweak a whole lot of the things along the way, reduce construction costs by getting scale and replication and actually start working on this, then it impacts back through to affordable housing.
Who would do that, by the way? This business of the cost of materials at the moment was something we revisited, having done more than once recently. Is there the opportunity to procure, including perhaps possibly for price competition purposes if necessary, importing some materials? Is there a need to get one big procurement operation that might end up being a quasi-government body for building of this scale? Because how much of a factor is the cost of building in New Zealand?
So the cost of building is certainly one of the components for the cost of an overall house, but there's a lot of bits along that way. So you've got development contributions, infrastructure contributions, building costs, you've got fees, you've got land supply, you've got consenting costs. There's all these things. And what we need to think about is how do we look at all of those in unison to reduce? And also, how do we do it faster? Because what people sometimes forget with development is that it's a long-term game. And the bits, if we can save time in going through these processes, if we can reduce consenting timeframes, if we can reduce all the bits along the process, then you have the opportunity to have reductions in overall cost as well. Because otherwise we just keep heaping more and more cost on.
Yeah, we do that in an environment where we're hearing that about a third of properties being built in Auckland at the moment, I'm pulling this out of the back of my head, are failing building inspections. There's a concern that there's a shortage of those who are supposed to be supervisors on site spread too thinly and that there's possibly a lot of substandard building going on. And this is my point. The individual solutions to the individual problems look great, but some of them are butting up against each other.
Yes.
And is that one of the reasons we've not been able to progress? And is it going to remain a problem? I mean, you're talking about the affordability and increasing home ownership.
Yep.
But again, is that going to sort of butt up against other precious as well by bringing even more people into the market, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Or are you going to end up somehow trying to substitute the existing investment, the existing tenancies into home ownership? Again, how do you do that? Because you've got a lot of forces working against each other.
That's right. And at the moment, a lot of those forces are working in silos. You know, it's that old adage of walk a mile in another man's shoes. We've got to get people together around the table who are all involved to say, okay, if I'm in the private sector and I'm a developer, these are the issues that impact me. And then the council might say, well, these are the issues that are impacting us from consenting. These are the issues from a government perspective. And we need to sit there together and solve it. And if you look at what Julie Nelson did with the People's Project in Hamilton, that's exactly what they did. They got everyone together around the table and said, how do we solve, how do we just end homelessness in Hamilton?
I come back to the same problem, is that there's not enough houses at the moment.
I know, exactly.
To solve all the individual strands of the plan. Let's talk about the home ownership, the assisted ownership, which is a really interesting model, especially in a city now with the average house price hitting $1 million.
Yes.
For things like, explain a bit more some of the assisted home ownership models you've got here. 50% share initially. What you could actually buy shares in the house. I've heard a private company proposing this.
Yeah,
what are some of the other models that might get you from partial ownership to full ownership?
So one of the best examples of that in the market at the moment is the New Zealand Housing Foundation. And they've done a really targeted and a fantastic program on this assisted ownership where people can have an opportunity at the outset to have a 50% share in a house, and then over time, as they're able to, they pay back the rest of the capital and they can own it outright. So it's a fantastic way for people to get on the ladder if they can't afford the whole house. And what we need to think about is those sort of programs. How do we expand those? How do we get more people, you know, going along that housing continuum to get on the ladder?
What sort of organisations run these schemes? You've also talked about shared equity rent-to-buy schemes. What sorts of organisations can provide those?
So the New Zealand Housing Foundation is a non-for-profit. So a lot of that sort of thing is a non-for-profit, because their reason for doing it is, again, to try and help improve the housing situation in Auckland. But imagine what it could look like if we could expand those operations and offer alternative ownership options for people. It all comes back to the thing about building and strengthening Auckland communities.
Agreed. But again, I just see more people coming into the market.
Yep.
And again, more demand, more on the demand side, at the time when there's constrained supply. And that's just going to do one thing, isn't it? It's just going to keep pushing up that price.
But we have to get the supply side sorted at the same time. And the thing is, it's not an overnight solution. You know, development is a long-term game, and that's why we need a long-term plan. And we have to have these plans. We've got to know exactly where we're up to now. We don't even know what's coming through the pipeline. We need to know what those goals are and then how we achieve them. Because we've got to get it cranked up, and the only way we can get it to the scale that we need is to do it together and take out the blockages that are impacting everybody along the way.
What would you do about the elephant in the room, which is a construction industry reaching capacity to build, even if the land became available, even if all, you know, the stoushes over, you know, the Auckland plan are finally resolved and it's passed, and there can be some intensive development in areas where there couldn't be before.
Yes.
Even if all that happens,
yep.
How do you resolve the construction industry constraint and not build shoddy properties?
So, again, that's another target area we need, because we need to not only focus on the construction industry but the development community as well. We need more developers and we need more in the construction industry able to scale up. So, you know, we need a lot of the New Zealand, the smaller builders to scale up a bit. And the businesses that are in this game will scale up if there's certainty. If they know that there are projects coming through and they've got scale, people will scale up. But on the other side, the development community, we're all sitting there at the moment thinking, you know, we're still asking that question, when's the market going to turn?
So tell me more about that. What is the capacity to increase development now? How near capacity are the big players or any players for that matter?
So there's a raft of different plays. So it's about understanding the different sectors of the market. So on one side, you've got the public sector and the development that they are doing. Then you've got what I call the land subdividers. And there's a lot of the big guys, the Todds and people like that, doing big land subdivisions. And then you've got the smaller builders at the other end doing small projects. But probably the biggest gap that I see is in that medium density development, the townhouses, the apartment market. And what, you know, everybody forgets, but, you know, the GFC of 2008, quite a number of those developers went under. And so, you know, we need to get those guys, you know, we need those sort back and to scale those up. And so, yes, where do we get those from? Well, they will come if the projects are there, if we can make everything stack.
Is there spare capacity there now, do you believe? And is there some spare capacity, as you say, that is awaiting a downturn or fearing, you know, flooding the apartment market? We saw one or two apartment developments just cease recently. So is there capacity there, as you say, if there were certainty?
Yes, because that's the way the market works. Everybody scales up. And I think one of the things you just commented on, the projects that had fallen over recently, I think one of the things to understand is that there's quite an extensive process before you start construction to get a development project off the ground. So you have to buy the land, you have to do the feasibility, you've got to get consenting, then you've got to get your pre-sales, and then you've got to get your bank financing. And if you get all those ducks in a row, then you start construction. But the challenge is that from the developer perspective, of any of those issues, so if you've had big increases in construction costs, if you've had big delays in being able to get consents, or you haven't been able to get the pre-sales, then you won't be able to get the finance to do the construction. So it's about saying, how do we get all those bits along the way going faster?
Should there be a government building program? Would that provide some certainty apart from anything else?
Well, the government has got a program underway. Housing New Zealand have got a development program, and then you've got MB who have got their Crown surplus land. But again, the question for all of us, it's not just the government or the council or the private sector, it's how do we all step up? Because we've got to get to a rate 2.5 times what we've been doing in the last 25 years if we want to hit those targets.
Let's talk about how these things do happen, because last time we were talking to you, it was about that Auckland development, Papakura development, and that was a case where land was bought by Housing New Zealand, 24-hectare site, the old Papakura Army base.
Yes.
2004 it was bought for $10.7 million. And when we talked to you, I think it was back in last year or the year before.
The year before, I think.
Its value had doubled, and it was still there, undeveloped. And not only that, the part that was earmarked for social housing diminished in size, and the first homes were all to be full private sale. How's that as a... And I know you came late to that, Leonie, I understand that. How is that as a case study of what goes wrong?
So if you look at that project right from the beginning, and to give credit to Housing New Zealand 10 years ago and the government, they had a whole proposal going forward. That project got caught in the cycle, in the downturn. And so the developer, when the GFC hit, then couldn't make the development work. And so the deal fell apart. And so why I mention that is that that's quite an important issue to think about the next cycle, because we need to think about how we can keep momentum going when the cycle changes.
Past 2018. I've used this so many times. Bill English's references many years ago to watch the year eight, because there was a recession every decade from 1968.
Yeah.
This one, as I said, with immigration at the levels it is, we may be in a different kind of cycle, but who knows?
Mm.
How do you buttress a building program against an inevitable economic downturn at some point?
That's right. How do you? Yeah, so it's about understanding what are the risks for the developers during that time. And so how can we then mitigate those risks? So, for example, some of the big risks for the developers is you buy the land up front, and it might be 2 years, for example, to go through the whole consenting process and the pre-sales before you can start construction. So some of the things that the government or the council could bring to bear is they could say, for example, okay, we won't take payment for the land up front. We'll help de-risk this project by taking payment for the land when the properties are sold later down the track, because that de-risks it for the developer. The other options are that, for example, the community housing providers or for social housing purposes, they might say right at the outset, right, we'll commit to taking 25% of the houses that are built in this new development. So that gives a pre-sales requirement to the developer. developer. Again, it helps mitigate the risk. If we can get, you know, streamlined or more streamlined, because I know there's a lot of work that the council are doing in this area on consenting, it helps reduce the timeframes. You know, anything we can do to help mitigate the risk means that we increase the confidence and the development community will keep going, because for them it's all about certainty.
You're launching this today.
Yes.
You're speaking to, what is the conference that you're speaking to?
So this is the I've been offered the opportunity to launch it today at the Community Housing Aotearoa Seminar in Auckland. It's their annual seminar, which is fantastic.
Have you talked to the new Mayor of Auckland yet?
No, I haven't yet. I have sent him the information about this, but I'm sure, as you can appreciate, he's got a few other priorities. But I have talked to a number of the other executive staff and council members.
And who... I mean, they would have to be part of this new entity you're talking about.
Yes.
Central government would have to be, wouldn't
yes.
it? Yes. So who's, if it's going to happen, who's going to have to make the decision to make it happen?
So it's what we need is we, you know, as I said, using that rowing analogy, we need everybody in the boat. We need the government. We need the council. We need the private sector. We need the community housing providers. We need iwi. We need the finance community. And we need to start the conversation around how do we solve this together? How do we solve this massive Auckland housing issue instead of just going around and around about the problem?
You didn't tell me who's going to have to launch it, but you're probably going to get some feedback on it, and we'll see what happens from here. And good luck with it.
Thank you. Thanks, Catherine.
Leonie Freeman. The homepage.nz has just been launched. You can get a link on our page, radionz.co.nz/9 to noon.